What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast brought to you by the letter S. Coming up, sackings, Stockport, Stanley. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. And welcome along. We are back with another podcast for you this week. Bumper show lined up today. We'll look back on the best of the weekend's action. We've got plenty more to come beside as well. And we're back to full strength because Adrian Clark is back from catching some winter sun to talk everything Football League. Did you have a nice holiday, Clarkie?
Good to see you, boys. Lovely holiday. Yeah, absolutely lovely. Didn't think about football once, I'll be honest. didn't watch any, didn't really check up on the news until I got back. So, yeah, feel quite refreshed. Yeah, it's all systems go. How was it without me? Hope it wasn't too good.
Sam Parkin can answer that. We got by, didn't we, Sam, with the help of Johnny Jackson?
Just basically spoke about The Sopranos for half an hour, Clarky. Probably much to the annoyance of the listeners, but I know that you're not au fait with the best TV programme of all time. So good one for you to miss, mate. Yeah, and I was pleased to see the swirling rain and wind, mate, to welcome you home as well on Saturday evening.
I come back on Friday. It was in the middle of this storm, wasn't it? That was a wake-up call, that was. On the plane, fully immerse myself in Succession, which I'm sure you boys probably watched already, but yeah, little bit hooked on that at the minute.
Yeah, very good. Anyway, from excellent TV dramas to the drama at Accrington Stanley in a minute. But first, how about this? Our friends at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided. It's 18 plus and remember, always gamble responsibly. All right, let's kick off with some news then. And not often we start with a story on Accrington Stanley, but owner Andy Holt's Twitter rant left us no choice. He's putting the club up for sale, as announced on social media this weekend. This is because he's not happy with John Coleman and his assistant Jimmy Bell using local media to put word out that they want new contracts. Their deals expire at the end of the season. Here's Holt talking to BBC Lancashire.
Time's come for me to call it a draw. I'm proud of what we've done and I think we're in a good position. As a club, it's a great little club and long may it continue. It's just not for me. The result of Jimmy's comments certainly raised a lot of eyebrows among fans, some of which were very unhappy, insisting that I give contracts, some of which, in fairness, were happy that they're not getting contracts. So it's not it hasn't all been one-way street, but that's football. The fact is, we got relegated last season. Our managers earn decent amounts. They have a year left on the contract. I were worried after their performance last year and our performance as a club, including me, that we might get a double relegation. And had we gone down, the club couldn't have afforded the amount of players and the salaries or the managers on other long-term deals.
Adrian, what did you make of this when you saw the tweet start being fired off from Andy Holt's account on Saturday night? He's always been the kind of level-headed voice of trying to get fairness in the EFL, hasn't he? This seemed quite out of character, but the straw that broke the camel's back was his staff asking for some more money.
Yeah, he's had a few social media sort of rants and threads, hasn't he, over time, but this was the most sort of pointed, wasn't it? This was great value. I mean, it was great content, wasn't it? You pointed it out to me. I got straight on it and I was almost watching them come in live and people were sort of accusing him of being drunk or something like that. But clearly he feels exceptionally strongly. And do you know what? If I'd just been relegated, if my club had just been relegated and I'd put a lot of money and I mean a lot of money into it and the manager and his assistant pretty much said sack us or give us new deals, I would have had the hump massively. But he says that he gave them a chance because of the history, because they've done so well for the club over the years. But now that they're clearly angling, using any means possible to push him into offering them new deals beyond this season. And, you know, it's not as if they're flying Accrington Stanley. So I think Holt is well within his rights to have the hump and to potentially get rid of the two at the top there. But it seems that he'd rather step aside. And yeah, I don't blame him. I mean, I just don't think Accrington Stanley's ever going to be a cash cow, is it? I know they've redeveloped the stadium and tried to bring in income through this new sort of suite that they've built behind the main stand, which is great. But I don't think he's ever going to get his money back, is he? So it's if he's not enjoying it, He's working with people he doesn't get on with anymore. Why not get out?
Sam, they say the quickest way to become a millionaire is to start with a billion and then buy a football club. It's a thankless task, isn't it? And it feels like he's just reached the end of the road. So fair enough. But also he's quite insistent on the fact that he's not just going to leave the club in the lurch. He'll wait for an appropriate buyer. So maybe this is one of those things that will work out best for all concerned.
Yeah, I can't disagree with anything Clarkie said, really. It'd be interesting to know whether he strategically timed his run, Jimmy Bell, after, I think, is it two wins and a draw, a good draw at Morecambe, I think it was, and a couple of good victories, and then obviously beat MK at the weekend. So whether he would have gone in and spoken to the Beeb off the back of a losing streak, who knows? But yeah, there's two sides to every story. I think there's probably loads under the surface here, and you have to factor in that they have been incredibly successful for the club, that management duo, for over 20 years or around about that time. We don't know what type of budget's been available over the last 12 months. Don't know what kind of money Coleman and Bell are on. So, you know, without all the facts, it's difficult to fully pass judgment. But I did look on, not in astonishment, that's too strong, but I was surprised when I saw that interview. I was surprised, and it looked like a bargaining hand, didn't it? So yeah, the chairman has reacted really negatively to it, and it looks like one, if not all three, will possibly be in new employment or in different roles next season at Accrington.
All right, well, we'll keep an eye on that. There's been lots of managerial movement in the last week as well. We've pondered upon the future of Millwall boss Gary Rowett recently. Well, him and the Lions have parted ways. Rowett said, "I've thoroughly enjoyed being manager of Millwall and to part with a feeling that the club has progressed during my tenure." One of those things, this may be, Sam, that actually is properly a mutual decision, it feels like to me.
Yeah, it got rubbished a little bit, didn't it? I think last week by various sections of the media, "Oh, he's been sacked, blah, 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 blah." You know, the terminology is probably incorrect or whatever. But no, I genuinely think that this is probably what's happened. It's the a natural parting of the ways. I think, you know, Gary Rowett's done a pretty good job there, given the resources, given the finishes in the table. I think there's just been a little bit of uproar, maybe since that Blackburn defeat back end of last season, when he probably got tactically outdone by John Dale Thomason. And this season, you look at the signings, I think like Joe Bryan, I think this Casper Denore is getting rave reviews. Some of the forward options now, I think there's probably the tools to probably play slightly more attack-minded football. And I think that the fans have probably voiced their disapproval at some of Gary Rowett's tactics. But you can't doubt that he's had a really good spell there. He'll walk into another championship job, I think. And as I've said on numerous platforms and podcasts, I do believe it's one of the hardest jobs in English football, because you cannot set up a team at the Den to be overly expansive. The fans will just not get fully on board with that. So there's such a fine line between, you know, a manager going in there and trying to play, you know, really possession-based football and the type of football that Gary Rowett and previous managers have done. So I don't envy the guy that's going to go in there, but he goes in with a pretty good squad. And I think that's probably the basis for what this decision's been made on. You know, the fans, you know, probably just having enough of what Gary Rowett is, and that he's a pretty good coach, a manager who sets up a team really well defensively and tactically, but is not really someone who's going to go front-footed and take the game to the opponents.
Adrian, we think that Rowett will get another job pretty quickly. I was just looking at who the contenders are to replace him. Kevin Muscat is the favourite. John Eustace is in the running as well. Feels very Nathan Jonesy to me, this job, potentially. Your old pal, would he be amongst the runners and riders?
He might be interested. Yeah, he could be. I don't know whether Nathan's personality and the Millwall fans necessarily be the best fit.
Would either work really well or really horribly, I think.
I'm not so sure. I think I would step aside. I think I completely agree with Sam. I think this is quite a unique job. Gary Rowett deserves massive credit for staying just under 4 years in charge, you know, keeping a very smooth ship sailing, you know, largely top half. Did great. Maybe Luton's success in a funny kind of way heaped more pressure on him, because Millwall fans think, oh, maybe we could have gone up, you know, if we'd have just, you know, done this differently, done that differently. So yeah.
I had that debate with someone the other day, and the only difference the only conclusion we could really come to was that Luton's recruitment has just been better. You know, the players that they've plucked from lower levels have been able to make the step up, and yeah, they've picked a few gems, whereas Millwall, I don't know, it's probably been hit and miss over the last few years.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. But yeah, looking at the list, I think it sort of screams Millwall, really. Someone who knows the fans, someone who knows what they're walking into. And that's Kevin Muscat, who's done very well in Australia and in Japan. He's quite an experienced manager now. He's followed Ange Postecoglou, actually, in both his last two jobs and been successful. And there's also, of course, Mark Kennedy, who we'll get to very shortly, who's just left Lincoln. Now, I played against Mark Kennedy when he was in the Millwall youth ranks and reserve ranks and whatnot years and years and years ago. So he'll probably be someone that they consider as well. But yeah, it's a good gig for someone because the squad is decent. You know, I like a lot of the players. I like Fleming in particular.
Well, let's get to Mark Kennedy then. Lincoln have sacked him after a run of one win in six league games, led them to a top half finish in League One last season. They've struggled this time around. A slightly odd twist. Lincoln chief exec Liam Scully said it wasn't results that got Kennedy the chop, but his comments about midfielder Danny Mandrew had played a part. Scully said, "One thing I can say, and please let's not let this run away, but I don't think it was helpful in terms of our characterization of Danny Mandrew after the game. Is that part of it? Yes. Is that the reason? No." Explain that to me, Clarkie, then. Is that the reason or not? I mean, why mention it if it's not a thing?
It's clearly a thing, isn't it? A manager's not allowed to criticise players that get themselves red cards. Is that what we're saying at Lincoln? You've got to pat them on the back and clap them off. Is that what they want? Is that what they wanted from Mark Kennedy? He wanted him to say, "Oh, well done, son. Yeah, well done, mate. Yeah, give him a round of applause." Of course you don't. If someone's, you know, done something silly and got themselves sent off, you're well within your rights to be critical in public. You know, it's fine. And, you know, I don't know how bad that criticism was. It didn't seem that bad to me. So yeah, it said something about, you know, he's in danger of becoming just another statistic, you know, in terms of, you know, he's basically warning the player, if you don't show more discipline, then you'll be forgotten about and your career might go backwards. That's fine, in my opinion. So yeah, it's a strange one. And it's really strange because it's Lincoln, and Lincoln are a really well-run club. Lincoln haven't sacked, you know, they don't sack very many managers. They normally lose managers to teams because they're so good at appointing them that they end up going on to bigger and better things. But yeah, so I can't criticise Lincoln as a club because I do rate them. I think they go about their work pretty well, by and large. But yeah, to say that this isn't results-based and it's, you know, to bring that up is very, very strange. I feel sorry for Mark Kennedy, who was doing brilliantly, really. They were so solid, Lincoln City. Really, really solid. Didn't create a lot of chances, maybe nowhere near enough chances. But, you know, in general, they were pretty hard to beat, weren't they?
Sam, I've been linking Danny Cowley with every job that's come up since we started doing this podcast. How about a return to Sinsel Bank?
It feels like there's kind of always been a bit of an interest in returning, and maybe that Lincoln would be open to it. But I thought it probably would have been done by now if this was the case. I've seen a few runners and riders that have been written about in the last few days, and there's quite a few kind of left field shouts. There's a couple of guys out the Irish league. I think Stephen Bradley was the favorite at one point from Shamrock Rose. So it would be interesting. I wouldn't be surprised if they went down that route, actually. I know Mark Kennedy was a brilliant player, but obviously he came a little bit out of nowhere to get that role. And yeah, strange. I think I've messed up a few of my phrases on recent podcasts, haven't I? I think this, maybe it's the straw that broke the camel's back, this, that there's been a few things, I think, rumoured to have been said publicly to players or privately to players. I just don't think maybe the spirit within the dressing room, within the training ground, has been brilliant. Results have been fine, especially with a dearth of front players, I think, to pick from as well. He's not really had out and out strikers to go with in recent times. So it's definitely not based on results. It's probably something that's happened off the pitch. And was it the chairman, sorry, that said that? Or was it the
CEO, I think, yeah.
CEO. I mean, he shouldn't have said that, I don't think, because now, you know, people are going to jump on that. He actually said, didn't he, in his second paragraph, his next sentence or whatever, "Don't run away with it. You know, don't make this the reason as to why I've sacked him." But he probably shouldn't have said it because people are only going to run with it and speculate exactly as he didn't want.
Yeah, it's sounds like it's, you know, maybe Mark Kennedy's a little bit old school, maybe in his managerial style and approach, and that there might be a few snowflakes in the dressing room. I don't know. That's how you now perceive Lincoln's dressing room, isn't it? And you know, Sam's obviously touched on things he might have heard as well. In terms of being a manager, I think he's proved to be a really good organizer. Mark Kennedy, as Sam said, there not that many goal getters. But I looked in open play this season. Lincoln City have conceded 4 goals. That's excellent. I mean, that's sensational, really, in terms of their defensive quality. So he should pick up another gig, no problem. But yeah, I'd love to know. Maybe we'll never know what was the truth here. But yeah, it's an odd one.
The other departure was Ben Garner from Colchester. Saturday's 2-1 home reverse by Harrogate left the U's second from bottom after a load of league defeats in a row. 4 of them, actually, after they'd had that incredible 5-4 win against Notts County. Not sure there's really much for us to say about that other than fair enough, maybe.
No, I disagree. I think seems like they've pulled the plug a little bit early. I know that they're struggling, but I don't know. I thought it was only a few weeks ago we were praising up some of the recruitment. You know, they just beat Notts County 5-4. I don't know. At least he had a plan and he had a vision and a way of playing. I don't know. I think that they would have been okay had they stuck with him. Smacks of a panic one to me. When you get spanked 5-0 at Forest Green and then you back it up with a home loss against Harrogate, chairman and owners are going to get twitchy. And I think that's what's happened here. I think it's a little bit of a panicky one.
100% agree with you, Clarkey. I had a little look at the team from the weekend as well. And I think some of this is out of necessity and some of it's Ben Garner's decision making, because there is a couple of experienced lads on the bench. The team is kids. Honestly, it's unbelievable. The keeper's 19, I think. The strikers are 20 and 19, respectively. He's got 3 guys in their early 20s in midfield. You've got Cameron McGeehan and Connor Hall. The only experience in that side. So I think maybe a little bit too youthful. Maybe that he's missing a few experienced players, but we haven't got time to do it today because obviously Matt wants to crack on. He doesn't want to talk about Colchester United. but the attacking statistics suggest that they're creating chances and they're not one of the worst teams in the division. So I think it's a case of probably the players have got to take a bit of responsibility for this. But where Ben Garner goes from here, don't really know. Maybe, I don't know, he'll want to be a number one again, won't he? But maybe he'll just have to take stock of the last couple of gigs, maybe rebuild somewhere. But I think there is a good coach in there, definitely. I saw enough, obviously, at Swindon.
Yeah, he's got through a few jobs, hasn't he, in the last year or so. We'll see where he pitches up next. Okay, let's get into some of the weekend's games. Well, Leicester, Clarkey, they're waltzing away with the Championship, aren't they? 11 points clear of the playoff pack after the Foxes beat up on the Swans on the South Wales coast. Had to come from behind to do it this time. Swans have been in good form themselves, but Leicester are just irrepressible, aren't they? Particularly on the road.
Yeah. They're just wear teams down. It's very, very exciting times at the King Power Stadium for the supporters, because the football is high class. And they weren't even remotely near their best in this game, yet they've swatted aside Swansea, who were in pretty good form, and they've had to do it coming from behind. So that is pretty ominous. I like the wingers. They're very hit and miss for Tawu and Mavididi. That they might wind you up if you played alongside them at times, but because they stay so wide but they're so positive, and when they get it right, they're just thrilling and a nightmare, I'd imagine, for fullbacks to contain. The bottom line is when Leicester have the ball, the pitch feels like it doubles in size if you're the opposition. That's how much they stretch it and how they create space for one another. And yeah, it's difficult to see any other scenario other than Leicester winning this title with considerably over 100 points. That's where we're heading. Just from back to front, superb. Word on the goalie, by the way, I think we haven't talked much about him this season, Mads Hermansson, but he's good. He's really good. And when called upon, and he had to make a really good save at one point when the game was a little bit at a knife edge, tip one over, I think it was from Jamal Lowe. He's a good shot stopper, but also very good with the ball at his feet as well. I think that's a real smart piece of recruitment from Leicester City, who were well stocked for keepers. They've got tons of them. So they could have bumbled on, but they'd identified the man, and he's proven to be a terrific acquisition.
Incredible depth they've got too. Their bench on Saturday: Cody, Cassidy, Albrighton, Nianacho, Sutar, Chowdhury, Dakar, Atkin and Stolarczyk, the goalkeeper. Nobody in the championship getting close to that.
Yeah, it's statistically, obviously, 33 points. If you go over history and pretend that everyone got 3 points for a win over history, it's the fifth best start in the second tier ever. And since World War One, there's only been one team that's had a better start to a season, and that was Fulham. Back in 2000. So would that have been Kevin Keegan's Fulham? I can't remember, but they were money bags Fulham at that point, weren't they? So no one since then or before really has had a start as good as this in the championship.
Leeds, one of the teams trying to keep pace with them. They're up to third after Daniel said, "Fuck are you," to his old club Norwich, coming from 2-0 down to win 3-2 in East Anglia, thanks in no small part to Crescencio Somerville's brace. Sam, do you want to talk about the Leeds comeback, or are you framing it as a Norwich collapse?
No, I want to talk about the Leeds comeback, I think. I think I was surprised that Norwich were, you know, two goals to the good. But yeah, I mean, I thought incredibly bold from Daniel Farke. Is it? I don't know. They've got a good look about them defensively. I mean, in two centre halves, I think this is their strongest centre half partnership now, Rodon and Strike. And right back, they got a bit of a problem with Jed Spence not available. So Archie Gray's been playing in at right back. They tried Shackleton there, and Archie Gray had a bit of a difficult afternoon up against Hernandez and Sara, I think, who got his goal from that side of the pitch as well. So I don't think defensively they're perfect, but I think they're so good going forward. There's so many options that they're going to outscore the majority of the teams. And if they can improve defensively, Leeds should be probably on Ipswich's tail quite soon. And here it was just Daniel Farke going for it, basically, at 2-1 behind, went to a 3-5-2 and basically had his front four still on the pitch and introduced Bamford and Nonto from the bench. So it was a ridiculous looking lineup that finished this game. And obviously they got two brilliant goals through Somerville. And I think it probably encapsulated the problems that Norwich have got. I mean, they scored two goals when their weakness recently has been their lack of prowess in attacking areas because of no Barnes and no Sargent. But here, I think the lack of a real defensively minded midfield player, and also that lack of pace at centre half, I think was evident again. And that to me is holding them back. And the fact that Leeds have just got more depth. There's a big gulf between the two squads here. But no, it was another show of real attacking strength from Leeds United. And I think that's probably been their Achilles heel in some games, creating loads, not working the goalkeeper enough. So that was evident again in the first half. Angus Dunn only had one save to make, but improved no end in the second half. So not a complete surprise, given Norwich's frailties at the moment, but a brilliant win nonetheless. And I'm not going to say the word, but great celebrations in the away end. Great arms and legs.
Arms and legs, yeah. Do you know what, on Leeds, very quickly, Farke's teams in the past at Norwich played beautiful patterns, didn't they? Great, really attacking football, clever, intricate moves. But I just think this Leeds team looked miles better when they play on the break, as they did. I mean, that goal from Somerville was sensational, wasn't it? When they've got space to run into, Reuter and Somerville and Nonto and all these guys, they're just brilliant and brilliant to watch. So Farke, I think, is going to, or is in the process of slightly just adjusting the way he wants his teams to play. And yeah, I think that's a smart thing to do.
I read something on that exact topic this morning saying at Norwich they were under Farke possession heavy, intricate, home and away, whereas the Leeds fans believe that they're seeing, possibly because of the opponent at Elland Road, but yeah, a lot of the ball at home, a little bit more patient away from home. He's allowing the opponent to have the ball and they're playing a bit more counter-attacking. So whether it's a slight little switch from the manager, who knows? We'll see as the season evolves, but they're certainly setting up differently at home and away from home. And I think we said that early part of the season that, you know, on the road, because they're attacking pace, they're probably going to thump a few teams. And that's certainly been the case.
Well, maybe David Wagner could do with a bit of that tactical flexibility. Just one win in six in the league for Norwich now. Wayne Rooney's first game as Birmingham boss ended in defeat against a former teammate. Michael Carrick's Middlesbrough left it late to make Wayne's world far from excellent on Saturday. Just goes to show you, doesn't it, Clarkey, that if you have a little bit of patience, maybe as we were talking about with Ben Garner, managers can turn things around. He's probably lucky, isn't he, Michael Carrick, that he's got Steve Gibson calling the shots, because he is one of the more patient EFL owners. And all of a sudden, from, oh no, what's happened to Middlesbrough? They've totally collapsed from last season. They've won five on the spin.
Yeah, brilliant run, isn't it? Yeah, they're the form team at the moment, and it does look like they're back. Yeah, I've spoken about it before. He sort of went back to some of the old guard, didn't he? After blooding probably too many of the new signings all at once earlier on in the campaign. But yeah, they found a groove, they found their confidence, and this was their best performance of the season. This was outstanding, really. Absolutely dominant. 10 shots on target for Middlesbrough, the highest across the Championship on the weekend. They had 60% of the ball against Birmingham. 12 shots were from inside the box as well. It's terrific. And on that run of wins, 3 clean sheets now on the spin, so not giving much away at the back either. I mean, this was a 1-0 trouncing, really, for Wayne Rooney and for Birmingham. So not a good start for him and the regime that has obviously placed so much faith in him. But yeah, we can't judge Rooney too harshly off the back of one game, of course. But yeah, he would have been hoping for much, much more, you know. And he did make some changes. He brought Hogan back in, which sort of shunted Stansfield across a little bit to more of a wider forward role. He brought in Gary Gardner, who'd not really played much football since, I think, February, March time. So a couple of slightly controversial decisions in regards to team selection. And he did try a few different things. He was basically playing, I think it was like a 2-3-5 when they have it. So the two centre-backs, and then you've got the three central midfielders in front, and then you've got the full-backs who are just really, really high with the front three kind of inside them. So it looked a bit different. And if they're going to play that way, that's fine. But it will take a few weeks, I suspect, for the players to get used to that. So yeah, bad start for Birmingham. But yeah, this was quality for Middlesbrough. But the winner was a funny one, really, because they created so many good chances. And then the winner was sort of a long ball forward to Latte Lath, who'd come off the bench, who's really good, by the way, at stretching teams. I think as an impact sub, he could work brilliantly this year. He sort of stretched them, got them up the pitch. Morgan Rogers takes over, and then he plays a shocker of a pass to Matt Crooks, well over here. But it forces Crooks to give it back to him. And from there, Rogers scored. So, yeah, a bit of an ugly-ish goal, but they fully deserved it. I think if this had finished 4-0, that might have been a fairer reflection of what we saw at the Riverside.
So Borough back up and running very much so, albeit they're still 13th in the table, but only 2 points off the playoff places. They go to Norwich on Tuesday, Birmingham host Hull on Wednesday. Good to see Wayne Rooney ticking one off his new manager bingo card, saying we need to build on fitness levels. Absolutely textbook stuff from the one-time England record goal scorer. In League One, who's going to stop Pompey chiming their way back to the Championship? Carlisle had a good go. You don't leave Fratton Park early these days.
Sparks wants to go into the danger area. Shaughnessy! Oh, I don't believe it! He's done it again! Connor Shaughnessy in stoppage time! He only scores last-minute winners! Pompey haven't really deserved it! The winning run's going to continue! It's Portsmouth 1, Carlisle 0!
7 wins on the spin, Sam, and I'm always torn as to whether it's a sign of a team that keeps going right till the end and has great fortitude when they score loads of late goals, or if it's just quite a lucky team. What do you reckon?
I think it's happening too often to be luck now. Got that ability to come back from deficits, disappointments, to take points, and this is becoming a nice habit as well, isn't it? I think that's 4 injury time goals they've had now. 6 points, better off. A couple of big draws. One at Derby springs to mind, and then the recent last-minute winners from the same man as well. Shaughnessy stepping up against Wickham. That one was a little bit controversial. Got there at the same time as the keeper. This was a brilliant header against Carlisle, who had been really good, I think, for large portions of the second half. Had some great chances. I don't, you know, speak enough maybe about goalkeepers, but what a save from Will Norris in the Portsmouth goal from Butterworth, I think it was, in the 90th minute. and Pompey go down the other end, get the set piece. Now I'm going out here, I'm going big. Jack Sparks has got the best delivery, I think, from a dead ball in the division. I mean, I was there for the Papa John's game, if that's what it's still called, against Gillingham the previous week, and he made more or less every goal. They've got 8 now from set pieces, joint with Wickham. They were very high up the set piece goal scoring charts last season. They got 22. I think it was the second most behind Ipswich. So there's no shock there. But Jack Sparks' left foot is a joke. Honestly, it's on a sixpence every time it comes in. It's indefendable. So they're going to score so many goals off his left side. And seems an obvious thing to say, but I just like the makeup of this Pompey team in terms of the names now. It a midfield containing Robertson and Andrew in a little bit higher. You know, two top-level young players they've got available for them. Andrew only lasted 55, 60-odd minutes. He's still finding his way to fitness, but he was brilliant for 45 minutes in that game I saw against Gillingham. So they're improving. There's Marlon Pack to come back in as well. Kamara and Lane in the wide positions. Not their best day here, but loads of quality there. And Colby Bishop, I was watching on with a little wry smile because of not his day. My goodness me, he had 7 attempts, missed a couple of absolute sitters in the first half, escaped under his shirt, didn't he, after the second one that he somehow managed to miss. But he's had a brilliant season so far. This wasn't a great day, but as you said in your question, basically, Matt, it's a good trait, I think, because Carlisle played well here. They're finding it hard, you know, stepping up. But this was a good performance from the Cumbrians and another one ticked off by Pompey on the march.
Yeah, bad day for Carlisle. They had to wear that horrific multicoloured away kit. And it's, according to my old friend, the Route Planner, near 12-hour, 700-mile round trip.
I was half having that kit. I had it down as like a little bit George Campos-esque, no?
Fine if you're a Mexican in the 1990s, if you're representing Carlisle in 2023.
Extrovert goalkeepers only, yeah?
Right, hang on. Somebody's put a Derby defeat in the running order here. Oh, yeah, it was totally me. They lost at Shrewsbury on Saturday. Conor Hourihan's own goal settled it. I always feel bad, Clarkie, when we start about talking the team who lost the game rather than won it. So you can say something nice about Shrewsbury if you like. But I wonder if Paul Warne maybe is under a bit of pressure now. I know it's their first league defeat since the start of September, but they're very much mid-table and it's not looking like they're about to go on a big surge and make themselves contenders not only for the playoffs, but they ought to be up there with the automatic chasers, aren't they?
Yeah, Derby County look miles off. They look miles away from a Portsmouth, an Oxford or a Bolton. They're not even close to performing at the same levels at the moment. They just don't have that firepower. They don't have that vitality, that speed, the power. It's a collection of good players, but maybe it's the wrong cocktail. The ingredients don't really add up to a brilliant team at the moment, I'm afraid. So, yeah, I mean, for Paul Warne, he's got to somehow muddle on and get some results so that he can stay in the role until January, when he can then maybe reinvest in the types of players that he needs. But, yeah, there was some ructions afterwards. I think Conor Hourihan had a conversation with some irate fans afterwards. And he is under pressure. I've got a mate that supports Derby, and every week he's sort of almost hinting that he wants him gone, and that he's looking at John Eustace and other managers that are becoming available. They would prefer to make a change, I think, a lot of Derby fans. I do think it's more a case of the group being just too old and not fast enough and maybe not powerful enough. Yeah, in matches like this that are physical, because Shrewsbury, they're never going to make it a pretty game, are they, against the Derby County? In these kind of matches, they're really, really struggling. Here's a stat for you that I sort of discovered this morning. Derby have had 8 different scorers this season. Obviously, didn't get a scorer at the weekend, but they've had 8 different scorers. And all of them except Aaron Cashin, the centre-half, are in their 30s. 7 of the 8 in their 30s. They just don't have any young forward players or attack-minded midfielders that are making any kind of impact on the team. So that's what they need moving forwards. But on Shrewsbury, let's give them a little bit of credit. Very well organised under Matt Taylor. Another great stat, this. This is ridiculous. They're 9 points clear of the relegation zone, Shrewsbury Town, and they've scored 7 goals in 13 games. How's that happen? It happens because they're really well organised and they don't give much away. They've only conceded, I think, 13, and they win tight games like they won this one. Haven't been very reliant on set pieces either this season. Only one set piece goal for Shrewsbury. So yeah, they've been efficient. Don't create a great deal, but they're a good team. They're a solid team that will probably end up, you know, somewhere around mid table. But they could do with scoring more goals, Shrewsbury. But yeah, they'll take the one in this one because it was enough.
Call me old fashioned, but no good can come out of a player going over to speak to the away fans. Like
it's true.
It might just be frustration, but sometimes I think it's for show. Like the only way that can work is a well-chaired fans forum. If you want to talk to the supporters, you know, sit down in the week with the manager. If there's loads of discontent, you know, if you have to address a few things and want to get the message across from the players, even tweeting and stuff like that, there's no good. I mean, I don't understand it. We've seen a few examples, haven't we? Connor Hall last week, I think, that I spoke of earlier. Charlie Austin at Swindon last year, wasn't it, as well? It's quite a funny, like, social media video went around. But you're not going to get anything coherent across either way. You know, it's just going to be a wasted transaction because you're shouting.
One party's full of adrenaline, the other one's full of gassy stadium lager. Yeah,
there you go. Well, is it? There you go. You nailed it, mate. You didn't need me to go there.
What about in League Two? No reason for Stockport players to be pacifying their supporters. They might not be in League Two next season. They have to, by the looks of things. Saw off Grimsby in a 3-2 thriller. I'm always tempted to call every 3-2 game a thriller, Sam, but actually this one looked like it. Missed penalties, two goal leads thrown away, late-ish winner, lovely stuff, and Stockport absolutely flying.
Yeah, and similar to my critique of Portsmouth Carlisle, I think Grimsby were really unfortunate here. Did brilliantly to get back to 2-2, partly down to a brilliant game plan from Paul Hurst, who's been a back four, kind of a variation of 4-2-3-1 or a 4-1-4-1 all season. He went with three centre-halves here, a little bit more direct, and it caused Stockport a problem. And they've been brilliant, Stockport, since they've kind of ripped up their successful format from last year, where they were a kind of 3-5-2. They've been more of a back four this season, and it actually forced Dave Challoner to make substitutions to go back to how he previously set the team up. So it was a really interesting tactical battle, and Stockport just came out on top. Louis Barry's had that brilliant goal scoring run early part of the season where he was 7 in 7 games, I think, and this is first brace. Could have had a hat trick. I think he passed over the penalty taking responsibilities to Alafe, who was already on the score sheet, much to the disdain of his gaffer. Don't think they particularly enjoy that, especially when they get missed. But yeah, they got over the line here. I think it's 9 straight wins in all competitions. And yeah, the change in style, I think, has helped. Not style, the change in the setup has helped the personnel he's got available. And as I've spoken about so often with Stockport, still not at their strongest, still players to come back in and improve the squad. So pretty ominous for everyone else, but impressed with both sides here. And I think, you know, Grimsby gave a really good showing.
Yeah, they've been brilliant, haven't they? We shouldn't have written them off, Stockport. I don't think we did write them off, but the same happened last season. They started poorly and just went on an amazing run. And yeah, they do now look like the best team in League Two. Just a couple of bits on any other business. Lou Macari's grandson, Lewis Macari. Did you see that goal? Absolute thunderbolt to win the game for Notts County at Gillingham. Yeah, a player I can remember from my youth. Now being a granddad, having someone playing is... It makes me feel particularly old, but that was their 5,000th game, wasn't it, Notts County? So they celebrated nicely. I just wonder what your thoughts were on the Grant McCann red card at Tranmere. Did you see it? And it was on Friday night, and the ball ran off for a throw-in, and I think one of the Tranmere players might have wanted to pick it up. And all he's done is just backflicked it. He's just done a little flick and it's gone back towards his own dugout. So he sort of slowed down the play, I suppose. Referee, straight up to Grant McCann, bang, red card. And apparently that's the rule now.
Well, is this really a legacy from Keith Millen last week, Sam? We talked about that. Clarky, you won't have seen that. He actually tripped up an opposition player and got sent off for that. So is that the kind of thing that referees are alerted about and hot on?
That's interesting, though. You'd expect that just to be a yellow, wouldn't you? I mean, it is one of my pet hates, like an assistant physio letting the ball run through his legs.
We'd all do it, wouldn't we? Like, I reckon I've even done it watching kids' football, watching my eldest son back in the day. I reckon I've let it go just to kill a bit of time. You'd all do it. But yeah, just a little back flick. And apparently now that if the managers touch the ball, bang, you're off. Brutal.
All right, we are just about done for today. I do have a tweet of the week, though, before we leave you. It comes from Eric Eisner, who, of course, is the director of Portsmouth, famous for being part of the Disney Empire as well. He says, hard to find the words right now. Expect, he means accept, special, 3 exclamation marks. Feels like Groundhog Day, 2 exclamation marks. Most importantly, 3 points. This team has 0 quit. A winner at the death, all caps, never gets old. 3 exclamation marks. The fans stuck in all the way through, all caps, huge. Good late results as well. We go again Tuesday, exclamation mark. Hashtag PUP, hashtag Blue Army, and then a picture of the Portsmouth crest. It's not good, this, Adrian. That's my analysis of it. The spelling error is one thing, but there's too many exclamation marks. You can tell he's American because of the phrase zero quit. That's fine. But yeah, not a fan of this one personally.
No, I mean, this is just littered with no-nos, isn't it? But it comes from a good place, Matt. And, you know, you've got to take that into account when you're critiquing these. He's excited. And if I'm a Pompey fan reading this, I'm thinking that's a diabolical tweet. It's a shocker. It's accept, not expect. And I would criticise all of the grammatical errors, the use of zero quit, etc. But I'd still love it. I'd love him more because he's bought in, hasn't he? He's been hooked in by Pompey. He can't contain his excitement. He's typing it without even looking back because he's so full of adrenaline. And that's got to be a positive, hasn't it?
What do you think, Sam?
I mean, there's glaring errors there, isn't there? I don't know if it's a character issue. It feels like there's a few words been missed out as well. The badge, I mean, if he goes GIF Bill Murray there, fine. Do you know what I mean? I'd like to see a bit more creativity with the picture. But in the main, he's got a lot of info in there, isn't he? He's a fan of the late goal, certainly. So I'm with Clarkey. He's bought into the vibe down there, hasn't he?
Right, Adrian, tell people how they keep up with us on social media and why they should do so.
Well, I can't really say why they should do so because, you know, I've been a bit low on content in recent times, but stick with us. It will make it worth it. But yeah, it really helps us spread the word as well. So if there's a clip you like that we put out there, or if we share the link to the podcast, if you follow us and send it to your friends, it's just going to help everybody, I think. So yeah, it's at What the EFL on Instagram and on TikTok, and on X, it's at EFL What the. And yeah, I know we keep promising to do a bit more, but over time we certainly will.
And we are slowly coming around to calling it X, not Twitter. I've noticed that, not just from us, but everybody. You still can't say I X'd that. Weird decision. Anyway, not our decision. As Clarkey says, give us a nice review on Spotify and iTunes as well. That kind of thing helps other people find us and is very, very useful and appreciated. Before we go, a final mention from the offer from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. All right, enjoy the midweek matches. If you are off to one of those, maybe you're listening on the way right now. We'll be back with you again next week. Until then, many thanks for your company. Bye for now.